Why don't you tell everybody, the world, what you just told me, Grace, about
I said
my looks?
your face looks so adorable today. You look like a little pumpkin, a little jack-o'-lantern with your orange
Oh,
hat.
that's not how it came out, but there was some hurtful words. I won't. I'll be the adult here and not repeat what you said, because whatever.
Thanks for
Welcome,
that.
Grace. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
We're
Thanks, Eric.
live. We're live now. I
Yeah.
shouldn't even warned you. I should have just let you kept talking horribly about me, and then everybody would have seen the true colors of your hair.
I was watching and paying attention. Plus, I always say nice things about you. Always. I've never, ever said anything that can be considered negative, ever.
Well, I'm gonna catch you. Better watch like a hawk now, because I'm gonna throw it on at like 7:27 live and get you in one of these things. Oh, whatever. Oh, Grace, how was your weekend? You had busyness last week, and the weekend your daughter did something, right?
It has been a whirlwind. I've been just so busy since last Tuesday, and haven't been able to do a lot of running because it's just a lifetime thing that happened, and it only happens once. And I was so excited. My daughter got her bachelor's of fine arts in entertainment arts. I got to see her graduate. I went to her student exhibition, and we did dinner, and we did a whole family thing. And so I've just been my heart's been full of friends and family. And just so much pride for my daughter. She worked hard for that degree, and she did it. So that was exciting. It's a big
Now,
deal.
you said it was a whirlwind. Grace, what exactly is a whirlwind?
There's a lot to it. I'll create a PowerPoint for you.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. How was your weekend?
Make it one of those ones that the thing spins as it comes onto the screen and stuff.
Got it.
My
Done.
weekend was good. I was great, actually. I saw my oldest daughter, Lauren, qualify for the state track meet in the 3200 and the 1600. In layman's terms, that's close to the 2 mile and the 1 mile. So she's made huge gains this year. And that's this coming Friday and Saturday in Shippensburg, down your way-ish. So the weather is looking phenomenal. So we are super excited.
Yeah, and this she did qualify for states last year, correct? But this was with a little bit of a stronger time.
So she qualified in the 3200 last year, didn't run fast enough in the mile in the 1600.
Right.
This year she upped her game. We worked a lot on shorter distance speed work, and she got faster in the mile and qualified in the mile, yes.
Fabulous. Well,
So yeah, I mean,
congratulations, Lauren.
to be able to qualify for more than one thing, even in track, even though there are a lot of events, it's something to be proud of. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yep, so we're excited for that. But that was my weekend, other than doing boring stuff that nobody cares about.
That's right. Nobody cares about the rest of it. So let's keep on rolling because we have an awesome guest on. Also, there were some other fun races over the weekend. Massanutten in
Wait,
Virginia
Grace,
happened.
you think we should do the intro and start the show?
Oh, we might want to start the show. Let's do
Yeah, I
that.
mean, we could just keep rolling, but I feel like that's bad juju. Like
That's right.
I have to do my rhyme, we have to do the
Yes.
music.
We
All right,
got
so
a
if you
whole
stop
list of things to
talking
do.
just for a second.
I don't know if I want to.
Right, great. Are you ready?
Ready.
Now listen up, Grace. Grace, it's
Okay.
funny. You just interrupted me. Gotta start over. You ready? Great. Grace, it's funny. Running can literally break us down and destroy us while also making us feel most alive. Let's talk about what it's like to run 250 miles at Cocodona 250 on episode 115.
I'm Eric Idiot Runner Kosek.
And I'm Grace Hot Pants Langheim. Eric is all business in the front of the pack, and I am all about the party in the back.
That's right, business up front and party in the back. Together, we are the Running Mullet.
And we are going to talk about every aspect of running, the podium to the DNF and everything in between.
If you are a runner, this show is for you. Now sit back, get out your foam roller, and enjoy the party.
All right, next show, I don't want you to talk at all. I'm not going to talk at all. We'll start the show with my intro and the music because we keep getting forgetting about it. I keep forgetting about
it. I'm going to not talk at all. I'm just going to sit here and stare at you the next
Maybe you episode. Should do what you did like last episode and I can't even talk to you because I can't hear you and all that. That was fun. That was real lot of fun.
You know, live shows are full of surprises and I love it.
All right, so go ahead and do the thing you were about to do before I reminded you that our show didn't start yet.
Got it. So lots of fun races over the weekend. There was Massanutten. Jim Lanford had a really good weekend. And our friend Roxanne Strine made it into the Smokies. She is working on her Appalachian Trail through hike. And Rhoda Smoker, she ran her 8th Massanutten. So there's lots of fun stuff that happened over the weekend. But we have Jordan on the show today. Jordan Copenhaver, who completed the Cocodona 250.
And if you don't know what the Cocodona 250 is, stop living in a cave. Open your eyes. Wake up. And
wait, which one do you have to do first? You're going to stop living in a cave first? And then open your eyes and then wake up? Or should I open my eyes first, then wake up, then move from my cave?
I don't have time for this childish behavior. I want to hear his story. So I'm going to ignore you and move on. So yes, we have Jordan on. We're excited to hear his story. We're going to add him to the show right meow.
Right meow.
Right meow. Welcome, Jordan.
Welcome back, Jordan. I think this is your 4th or 5th time on the show? 4th time. Yes.
We're getting so old. Holy moly. That might be I don't know. What's our record these days?
That might be a record. It's a close call, I think, between Jordan and Erica.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Jordan, you crewed at Cocodona last year.
I actually didn't. I supported Nico from afar.
Okay, that's right. I'm sorry. You had just finished the AT last year.
That's correct, yeah.
And you supported your good friend, Nico, who ran it last year, which gave you the want to immediately sign up for this year. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I watched Cocodona from the couch with my laptop on my lap working, and the live stream was on the TV all week. And Friday, right after he finished, I signed up for 2025 Cocodona.
Nice. And you just tried, before the show started, you just pretty much tried to talk me into signing up tomorrow for the 2026 Cocodona. We'll see how that goes. I don't know. That's a big decision.
Don't disappoint me.
Oh, okay. Pull that card. Okay. Well, congratulations on the finish for one. That's huge. 250-mile race. How did it go for you physically as far as like were you trained for it, do you feel like?
Yeah, going into it, I felt a little concerned. I had an ankle foot ache that lasted for 2 straight weeks and it was really getting into my head. So I questioned if I overtrained for it because I put in a lot of training, but I constantly reminded myself that I have yet to do any sort of race or objective where I haven't felt something going into it. And that particular thing never shows its face during it. And once again, the foot ankle issue, never felt it. So yeah, I felt really good going into it. I never felt like totally loose like I wanted to, but as soon as I started moving, I felt how I was hoping I would. And I felt good for the duration of it. My feet hurt really bad, but I didn't have swelling like I did last year doing the PAAT. And I didn't have a lot of the really severe pain that I had last year, but my bottoms of my feet hurt really bad still. So that was the one thing that was kind of similar to when I did the PAAT, bottoms and the feet.
Nice. Well, you finished it, which is huge. I mean, one of the reasons we wanted to have you on the show, obviously, is because you're a good friend of ours. At least I think you're a friend of mine. I don't know how you feel, but I'm better than Grace.
He talks about you all the time.
Oh.
He's just waiting for the next time he gets to meet Jordan.
It's a huge achievement. I mean, you got the buckle to prove that you did it, which is amazing. But you faced some unimaginable adversity running the race, during the race itself, which I can't even begin to imagine getting through that and continuing on and finishing a race of that magnitude. But if you're okay with it, we'd like to talk to you a little about it.
Yeah, I am okay with it.
So you get out there. What day did the race start?
Monday, May 5th, 5 a.m.
Started Monday, May 5th. I'm sure the start line was super exciting. Was the weather nice then? I see it did kind of rain on you and get really nasty the first day, right? Something like that?
Yeah, we got rain in the Bradshaws. It was cold. I think it ended up being around a high of 68 in Phoenix. And the race starts in Black Canyon City, which is 45 minutes north of Phoenix and higher in elevation. So it was even colder. I think at the first aid station that we got to that day, the highs never got out of the upper 40s, low 50s. And it was hailing and raining when I got up there. It was a cold first few days.
And typically, I mean, being in those temperatures is not necessarily a bad thing unless you're unprepared for it. Now, it looks like you were pretty prepared for it. I think it looked like you brought everything but the kitchen sink with you. But did you find that some runners didn't expect that and maybe didn't have what they needed? Or did everybody kind of come with all the gear and ready for the cold?
Based on what I saw people not putting on when I was putting on my rain gear, I don't think everyone had their rain gear with them. It wasn't required from the start. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for how light it is and what the temps were going to be, I just wanted to have that for peace of mind. And, you know, I ended up putting it on. I ended up wearing my rain gear the first day, which I wore quite frequently the first 3 days.
It's such a tough decision because you want to go light, but you also want to have all the things.
Right.
I don't blame people for not bringing their rain. I probably wouldn't have.
Yeah, so I traded out 2 liters of water for volume that was a puffy jacket and my rain gear.
Wow.
So ultimately, the weight wasn't a factor because I was carrying less weight than what the water mm-hmm. would have weighed.
But there's a good stretch on day one that you have to go in between aid stations, right? That's a bit mm-hmm. risky.
Yeah, so I was planning on carrying 7 liters of water to start. Wow. I don't do well in heat and I wanted to make sure I had enough. I ended up only carrying 5 and I never drank less than I think 3 at a time. So I always had at least 2 liters on me of backup water.
Okay.
So I carried extra water still. It was just a really cool year, cold year, I should say, for Cogadona compared mm-hmm. to what it, you know, typically is. I mean, to be honest, it's weird to say, but I felt kind of gypped. Like it wasn't hard enough. It wasn't what I was expecting that first day, really.
Mm-hmm.
And the elevation is legit. So you climb 11,000 some feet in the first 50K, the first 31 miles. But that's supposed to be in exposed hot weather. And it was cloudy and cool. So yeah, it was super hard. Don't get me wrong, but it wasn't as hard as it was like last year, for example.
Yeah, I mean, I get that because I felt that way the first year I finished the Dock 100K. I felt like it was too easy of a course that year.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, Jordan, you kind of went through a lot during this race. So
yeah.
I think that makes up for it.
Why don't you tell us a story the best you can through the race experience and story. And if we want to stop with any questions, we will.
Yeah, but sure.
That work?
Yeah, that works. Yeah, so I mean, the weather, as nice as it was during the day, it was more challenging at night. So I was planning on doing lots of dirt naps. And like the first night, I was really tired. I've never been so tired overnight trying to get through the night. I had 6 miles to Camp Kippa aid station, and I was constantly falling asleep on the move, like just stumbling. I wasn't moving efficiently. I knew I needed to just shut my eyes. So I put on all my clothes, I put on my rain gear, and I laid down in a pile of wet leaves. And I slept for maybe 30 minutes out of the 45 minutes that I was laying there. And it gave me enough juice to get to Camp Kippa, slept another 45 minutes, solid, uninterrupted sleep there at Camp Kippa. And yeah, kept moving. After that, got to Prescott the next morning. That's where I first saw Nico and Alicia, my wife Alicia and my buddy Nico. They were crewing and pacing me. So I saw them at Crown King the night prior, but that was the first time that I saw them the next day. And yeah, it was kind of a mental game getting there. So I talked about some of the struggles I had on the PIAT. I had myself all stressed out again going into Cocodona, and I was having a lot of the physical symptoms that I had from stress and anxiety on the PIAT during Cocodona, and it was mentally messing with me. And I got to Prescott, talked to both of them, and kind of calmed myself down. That's the first time I picked up Nico for a pacer and never felt the symptoms again. So I kind of worked through that just like I did last year and got my confidence back. So that was refreshing. I felt good too. I had really no other issues other than that weighing on me. And once I pushed through it, I was just moving. I had some chafing that I thought I managed early on, and it took hold. That was actually my biggest ailment that I was dealing with, chafing. But with some diligence of, you know, proper TLC, I got that under control, and that went away too. So I was just feeling good. Alicia ended up pacing me, going from Mingus Mountain into Jerome, and I guess Jerome's really where I feel like my race started. So yeah, we were at the aid station. It was a great aid station. There were awesome chicken tacos there at that aid station. I think I had 3 of them, and we went back to our crew vehicle, and I was sitting there getting all my gear prepped. Alicia and Nico had everything laid out on the table. And I saw Alicia took a phone call, and I heard it was my mom's voice. And she had instantly walked away from me, took it off speaker. And I just felt like something was wrong. And I chased her down and made her put it on speaker again. And the first thing I heard was my mother say, "He's gone." She was talking about my father. So that morning, my father had taken his life. He had severely been struggling with depression since last fall. And that Wednesday morning, May 7th, happened to be the day that he left this earth. And within 3 minutes of time, I said out loud, and it was premature to say at this time to my mom directly, I said, "I'm not stopping." And I just knew in my heart that I needed to finish it for him and for my family, my mom, my sister, my wife, people that care about me. I needed to finish it for myself. And that just kind of came out of my mouth. 30 minutes later, I ended up calling her back because I wanted to get her, you know, her approval that she was comfortable with me continuing on, because I felt this commitment where I needed to finish this race, but also be there for my family. And obviously I couldn't do both. And I left that aid station. I left solo. It was an 8-mile stretch to the next aid station. And is obviously the only thing I was thinking about. And for the remainder of the race, it was pretty much the only thing I was thinking about. I did not know how it would be possible to keep moving forward, but I just kept doing that and chipping away. And Alicia and Nico are there in ways that I can't even describe. Just the emotional and mental support that they offered me was exactly what I needed to stay focused on the race and, you know, stay present. I also didn't want Cocodona to be this huge negative in my life forever. I wanted it to be a positive thing still, because Cocodona is amazing. The race is absolutely phenomenal, and I was enjoying it, and I still enjoyed the Cocodona experience even after this happened. And I felt like my father was right there with me at least two times for a long duration in Sedona and then going up and over Eldon. I can't describe how I felt. It was just, it felt surreal, and I felt at peace, and I felt like he was right by my side. So yeah, that was kind of Cocodona for me in a nutshell. It was heavily focused on finishing the race for my dad. And I haven't even really processed the race. I've barely thought about it. This is the most I've talked about it since I finished, really. And I haven't looked back at any of my Instagram reels. I was just looking at photos because race photos were posted today. And, you know, it was cool to see like the various points in the race where I was at. Yeah, I guess I'll stop talking. I'll let you ask some questions.
I don't know. I don't really have many questions. It's, you know, it's crazy. Not many people ever have something happen anywhere near similar to that during a race, I don't think. You know, obviously it's bad timing, it's horrible, but like, I don't know if many people know how they would handle any kind of news anywhere near that devastating and tragic. And the first thing you say is, well, I'm not stopping, or whatever you said it was. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you know, you just kind of make some decisions and go with it, and that's the decision that's made, and make the best of it. And you had posted a reel that something had happened, and I had a feeling that it would be something like that. And I was really happy to hear when you decided to keep going. You know, that's just my personal opinion. I think you could also stop, and I'd be happy for you to do that too. We just make the decisions that we make in life and make the best of them. And you are also a brand ambassador for Bigger Than the Trail, which is a great organization. And I think one of the things that they talk about is, and this is a good message, is that running in and of itself is not therapy, but I think it can be therapeutic. Mm-hmm. And so I'm interested to hear what parts of your time on the trail, or what pieces or what time periods or what things that you saw or felt or smelled were helpful or therapeutic at the time, or like I said, just helpful through processing everything.
Yeah, I think, you know, Eric brought up the point of like the timing of it. As horrible of timing as it was, if this was going to be that end result for my father, in a strange way, the timing almost was good for me because it gave me so much time to be in nature where I feel connected. Mm-hmm. I'm a very spiritual person, and I just felt connected out there to begin with. And you know, being in nature is healing, and running and hiking is healing, and just being with good company is healing. And I mean, outside of the time going through Sedona and then up and over Eldon, I don't know that I necessarily felt like any other time was, you know, unique in a healing perspective more than any other, because it was all just so healing. Like, I remember all of it. It was just, you know, seeing the sunset, looking out west towards Mingus Mountain, where Sedona could barely see the Red Rock formations because it was the last light. It was getting dark. I remember that time going up and down into the last aid station before we get into Sedona. It just felt, you know, magical being there at that moment. It was all very healing. Yeah. And, you know, you bring up Bigger Than the Trail. I actually decided to apply to being an ambassador for Bigger Than the Trail when my dad first started struggling last fall. It was kind of, you know, it was a very strong link between why I was running this race, raising money for Bigger Than the Trail, and what my father had been dealing with.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Go ahead, Grace.
You go, Eric.
You know, just talking about everything you just talked about, it's kind of a unique, I'm not good with words, so if I use the wrong word, it's not on purpose. But like, the situation is kind of interesting as far as grieving goes, because I think a lot of times when people are grieving, they want to go for a walk by themselves and be alone. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people that are semi-active want to go up to the top of a mountain, just take time alone, where you actually got to do that, you know, immediately following the news for several days. And it was healing to you, just like anybody. And that's not, obviously you're still grieving, but it was right there waiting for you in front of you. And you had the choice to use that immediately after hearing about it or stop. And that's, I mean, it's just a cool way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was very grateful that I could be where I was when I learned of that news. And yeah, in the end, Cocodona was and is a positive experience for me. I think it forever will be because of how I felt connected to my father when I was out there. You know, nothing's taking that away. What I felt, mm-hmm. how I was feeling, what I accomplished, who I was with, how much they were there for me. And just the race itself is absolutely incredible. All the runners around me, the right people were always around me. This guy, Anthony from New Jersey, just the energy that he brought, like, it was always positive. And when I was feeling down, just like hearing him run up behind, just the energy that he was emitting, it just lifted me up. And just talking to him for a little bit, you know, he didn't know what I was going through. I've since shared it with him, but like, mm-hmm. just having those people around you, that's what the trail running community is. That's what it, you know, brings to the table, just positivity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so tough. You never know what somebody else is going through on race day. And also, it can be a nice distraction and a nice reminder that there's so many good things still happening and people to be there for and people who get to be there for you and it all comes full circle. And these things are often but not always, you know, often unexpected, especially in your dad's situation. I think, you know, it's usually the folks who are able to see it through, who are done with their journey, it's usually unexpected. They yeah. hide it well. And with those situations, I mean, the best that you can do is to use it as an opportunity to be there for other people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, cause that person, you know, they were at the end of their journey, and there's plenty of people who aren't at the end of their journey yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Leaving, Boxborough Ranch, I had been crossing paths with Andy Jones Wilkins, AGW, mm-hmm. a lot, you know, obviously everyone knows him. I had never mm-hmm. met him, but had talked to him earlier in the race, and, you know, I saw him when we left Foxborough Ranch, and he was running in memory of his friend who passed away last November. And he was looking forward to the solo stretch, and I kind of was too. And, you know, it was this moment where I shared with someone other than Alicia and Nico that was there at Cocodona for the first time. I shared with him what I was carrying, what I was dealing with, and just the emotion that he portrayed and the look on his face. It showed exactly that he knew the pain I was feeling, and he was there for me in ways that, you know, I can't describe, but it felt so comforting, and it was a special moment to, you know, have with him. Something I'll always remember.
Yeah, I mean, these are the times where you feel, it's strange to say, but you can often feel the most connection. I mean, we don't talk about suicide as much, but there are a lot of people who've gone through challenges themselves, or they've lost loved ones who've died by suicide, and it's, nobody really knows a good, I don't think there's a good way to talk about it, but it's very real, and it hurts, and it's hard, and it's heavy, and it's so nice to know that you're not the only person who has gone through it or will go through it, and now you get to be there for other people and help them through it as well. Ugh. It's hard, heavy stuff, and I appreciate you talking to AJW. Did mention something on his podcast. I haven't met the guy. Follow him, of course. And I saw a glimpse of him, like this much of him, at World's End 100K a couple years ago, when he lived in Pennsylvania for a little bit and came to run that race. And he did mention it on the podcast, and I know you had given him permission to talk about it. And I appreciate you coming here to talk about it too, because like I said, I think it's a type of death that we just don't discuss. But it does happen, and it's very real, and it happens to good people. It happens to people who are dads and husbands and wives and cousins and moms and you know, not just strangers. It's a very real situation. So I appreciate you coming on the show to talk about it here because I don't know, maybe it'll help somebody.
Yeah. I think it's important to talk about. It's important for other people, as you noted, to not feel alone in their struggles. You know, I've been finding comfort in learning and hearing about other people's situations and just not feeling alone in what I'm dealing with.
Mm-hmm. All right. Jordan, you still ran Cocodona 250. That's pretty big. I want to hear some things about the rest of the race, like lighter stuff. Like, what was the favorite thing you ate? Was there anything that, like, you just destroyed?
I had a lot of orange juice. So orange juice kind of was my thing. I constantly was leaving aid stations with orange juice. So we had a Ford Expedition that had a bed in the back. So it was all gutted except the front two seats. And then there was a fridge in the center console. So we had chocolate milk, orange juice, other drinks that I like. And orange juice was like my go-to for liquids. And I did have three burritos. The second to last aid station. I remember those. I remember the chicken tacos. Like, the food at Cocodona is so good. And all of the aid stations have different foods. So if you don't like something, just get to the next aid station and it'll be something different.
So you just said,
because they're all so good, to be honest with you.
You just said you had a fridge in your vehicle for your crew. A fridge. That's kind of bougie.
Yeah, I mean, that was the one thing I was looking forward to with Cocodona, was having the commodities of a bed, a fridge, not needing to set up a bivy, a pad, hanging my food from a tree.
Right.
People with me, you know, just that experience is what I was looking forward to with Cocodona. And I definitely got what I was looking for out of it in terms of like the pacing and crewing experience.
What was your finish time?
I think it was 109:31:09, something like that.
Four and a half days, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My goal was to finish before 7 p.m. local time, and I finished right around 6:30. Nice. I was a couple hours behind schedule going into the last day, but I was moving good and made up a good amount of time. And Alicia, my wife, turned into someone I've never seen before. I've never been on trail with before. She was actually killing me going up and over Eldon. I told her she needed to slow down. And this was after we had done sub 20 minute miles going uphill for multiple miles.
Mm-hmm.
But it worked out because she got me finished before I wanted to be.
Yeah. Watching some of the videos, I'm like, oh, she's hustling. She is, which she's a strong hiker, you know, this is nothing new to her, but she was definitely making you move, toward the very end. That was awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, the whole race, it certainly showcases Arizona well, going through all the cool historic towns, Prescott, Sedona, Flagstaff, and just the topography and vegetation. The variation in it, you know, you start down south, you have all the giant saguaro cactus and it's dry, and then you gain elevation and you have shrubs, and then you gain more elevation within the first 30 miles and you have ponderosa pine, and you continue north and you have just valley area where it's just grasslands. And that's kind of where another interesting part of the race, Nico and I were going through an incredibly exposed area, going towards a massive wall of dark clouds with lightning. And we were concerned, we were exposed. We got incredibly lucky. We got to a culvert that went under a highway 2 minutes before it started hailing and pouring. And we just waited it out in there. But you know, we left when it was just raining light, and next thing we know, we're going through ankle deep water constantly. We heard that's the worst storm they had in the past 10 years.
Wow.
So it was very unique weather for Arizona.
Huh.
That's wild. Now, one of the things that kind of deters me from some of these races, desert races, is the lack of shade. I'm terrified that I'm just going to be in sunlight the entire time. And I love the green canopy that we have that is the East Coast. You know, some people, the AT is what called the green tunnel for a reason, right? It's just trees around you without vistas, without as many. And do you get any shade out there, or is it fairly exposed?
So the first stretch until you get to Lane Mountain is all exposed. There's no shade. But like I said, I got lucky because it was cloudy. Earlier in the day, it was sunny, but partly cloudy conditions moved in pretty quick. And then it turned to mostly cloudy. And there's so much moisture in the air. The tops of the mountains and the Bradshaws were socked in clouds. It was like East Coast weather in Arizona.
That's wild.
But once you get higher, there's shade because you have the ponderosa forest. I think I had heard it's the largest ponderosa pine forest in the world.
Hmm.
And a lot of the course is in that. So it's shaded in spots. But yeah, a lot of it's also totally exposed.
I think I would have to bring an umbrella. I think that's what I would need. Okay, how are you feeling now?
I feel good. I did a hike on yesterday, Sunday, just 3.5 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing really going on. I'm still going to take some time off just because I think that's important to do. but yeah. I feel like I could run right now. Yeah, the physical side, I feel recovered, mm-hmm. which I'm grateful for, because I could barely walk around the house for a solid week after I did the PAAT.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've been going heavy for the last couple of years. I mean, you completed Eastern States. You did completed an unsupported trek of the Pennsylvania AT in a very short period of time. So you've done a lot of stuff in the last like 2 years. So are you taking a little break, or are you going to keep rolling?
Yeah. What's next?
Keep going.
I have a route plotted in the Catskills. That's Ooh. Unsupported. That nice. Hits all of the high peaks.
Nice.
I'm not 100% committed to it yet, but mm-hmm. I'm excited about it. And I think it might be something that I do next year. However, this year I have Jigger Johnson 100.
Ooh.
Whites. So that's the next thing that I have coming up, which in many ways I think could be as hard as Cocodona, if not harder. So mm-hmm. it's 108 miles with 29,000 feet of gain, mm-hmm. and you have 54 hours to complete it. So on paper, it's the same pace as Cocodona is, but the vertical per mile is significantly higher, and obviously the terrain in the whites is legit.
Yeah. So, yeah, and no support for that, right?
No, you can't have a crew, but you can have a pacer after okay. a certain spot. So Nico, who paced me at Cocodona, he's going to be up there running the 20-miler along with a bunch of other people. And he's planning on potentially pacing me the tail end of Jigger Johnson 100.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I've done like all the planning for it that needed to be done mm-hmm. for Cocodona, and I'll start thinking about it in the next couple of weeks. I just want to try and process Cocodona a little bit more once I'm ready.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, so what you're looking at for the unsupported that you're looking at, is it anything similar to what Kim Levinsky did? Didn't she do something in that area that hit a bunch of peaks?
I don't want to comment on it, but I know she did something up there. But I,
yeah.
Sorry, I thought Alicia said something.
She follows all this stuff too.
Yeah.
I know Kim, most recently she did the long path, I believe. But before that, she did a route that she created in Jersey, I think. And it hit a bunch of peaks anyway.
Okay. Yeah, what I'm looking at doing, it mimics what's been done previously with like a through hike peak bagging of the Catskill 3500 peaks, but it's slightly different because there's two peaks that are now on private property
and
it's them. So it'll be a variation of that. And I don't even remember the stats, but it had a lot of elevation gain. I think it was around 160 miles with 60 some thousand vertical feet.
Oh man.
And a good amount of bushwhacking also, like actual bushwhacking.
You know, just make it a little harder for fun.
Yeah.
Well, you get that organized and laid out, and then we'll have you on the show to talk about it, and then have you on the show and dead and all that stuff. What else, Grace? Got anything else for him?
I mean, I have a lot of questions, far too many for this show. I think we covered a lot. We covered all the good stuff.
Yep. Jordan, we really appreciate you coming on and telling the story, the whole story. It's pretty cool. I mean, the fact that you completed it under the circumstances that you were under.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I've gotten a lot of support from people. The one thing I questioned when I decided to continue was how people would view my decision, and I haven't heard a single person that hasn't supported it. And yeah, I think that speaks volume to people in my life, because they know what's important to me and the community at large in trail running, like just good-hearted people that understand why we do what we do.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. It's a great community. And, you know, only you can decide how you want to grieve.
Yeah.
Well,
now, go ahead, Grace.
I have things. Okay. Things are swirling around in my little brain. I got to get them out. So Jordan, I mean, any recommendations that you have to somebody else out there who might be going through the same thing?
I guess I would say have a good support network around you, good people in your life, people that know you, people that relate to you and understand you. And I mean, a lot of people don't talk about what they struggle with. I think it's important to do so. Some people just naturally aren't good at that. I'm kind of too good at it. I feel like I share a lot, but that's what helps me process stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, ultimately you gotta listen to people that are trying to help you too, because, you know, if you got good people in your life, they're looking out for you, and you should pay attention to what they're saying.
Yeah. I think that's great advice, is to have that good support network, because we all need it. And if you don't have a great support network, you do now, because it's me and it's Jordan and it's Eric. We are there for you. So reach out to any one of us. Just if you want to chat, if you want to talk about Eric's face and how he struggles to smile, you can talk to me about that, because I would love to hear your thoughts.
See, this is where Grace gets nasty again. Jordan, before we go, I want to make sure we do send our heartfelt condolences to you and your family. I'm sure you're dealing with a lot now that you are home and not home from the race. So it sucks.
Yeah, that's a common word I've heard people close to me say it, and it's the best way to describe it. It sucks.
Yeah.
It sure does. And, but what doesn't suck is that we have this little podcast where we get to talk about this stuff. And you can tune in every Monday at 7:30 Eastern time to join in and talk about all the things that suck and all the things that don't suck and everything in between. And we'll talk about how Eric sucks. And
we're going to, next week, ironically, we're going to talk about how much World's End sucks.
Yes, we are going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how much World's End sucks next weekend. You've done World's End, haven't you, Jordan?
It's a fun suck.
Yeah, it is. 100% fun.
Is
suck.
It?
Yeah. It is. Yeah.
Definitely. We're going to talk about how Grace is going to kick butt and finish for the first time. And we're going to talk about all the things pre-gaming World's End. So,
Yep. So if you are interested in the World's End 50K or 100K, or you just want to hear us ramble about things and hear me make fun of Eric, you can tune in next weekend or next Monday, because it'll be super fun. That's what we're going to do.
You'll probably make fun of me on the weekend too. So
I will. I'll send you more videos.
All right, Jordan, thanks again for coming on and telling your story. We appreciate you. We always love hearing from you. Keep in touch whenever possible. Love to hear what you're doing next and how you're doing. So,
yep.
Yeah, and no, I certainly appreciate you guys asking me to be back on. It's been beneficial for me to kind of talk about this. Like I said, I hadn't been able to really process Cocodona a whole lot, so thank you for giving me the opportunity to do so on this platform.
That's awesome. Absolutely. Anytime. All right, Grace, take us out. Do all the things.
Okay, that's it. Like us on all the things and share with your friends, because we have awesome guests. Even if Eric and I suck sometimes, our guests don't. And like the stuff and comment and say nice things about it and share it and tune in Monday, 7:30 Eastern. And that's it.
All right.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.